could swear it's not just in your head. You wish you were dead, but you're alright.
Join us every Tuesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific for Bitcoover FM, featuring the best in chiptune, video game soundtracks, synthesized music, history of electronic instruments, and more, right here on CJSF 90.1 FM. We'll see you in the virtual plaza, and remember to synthesize with nostalgia.
Welcome back. This is CJSF 90.1 FM. I am DJ Star.
And I am DJ Coco.
And you just heard All Right by Paige Drobot. And we wanted to talk to you guys today, about Pussy Riot, which was an exhibit that I went to. Well, Pussy Riot is actually a political feminist collective that does like performance art and a lot of protesting. And the exhibit that I went to see was called Velvet Terrorism, Pussy Riot's Russia. So yeah, they're Russian. And
was that in Vancouver?
Yeah, it was at the Polygon Gallery. And it only goes until June 2nd, so you guys better get over there. It was by donation, and I thought it was a really cool exhibit. I learned a lot.
Interesting.
So Pussy Riot, they mainly did peaceful protests, and they were met with an insane amount of violence, and they were put into jail. They had to do prison labor, house arrest, and they were put on Russia's like most wanted list. They had to escape recently.
I think
one of the main women escaped as a food courier to Lithuania, and like they're just, yeah, they're on the run kind of right now.
I didn't go to the exhibit myself, but I did a little research and tried to watch a couple videos on Pussy Riot, and as DJ Star would say, it was pretty crazy. Like they would do performances in the churches. I think it was their 2012 performance in Moscow's Cathedral of Christ the Savior, and they basically all got up there. They put a bunch of colorful masks on. They tried to sing, and they had bass guitars.
Yeah, they had a punk performance.
Yeah, punk performance, but they were immediately beat off stage. Like, they had guards going in after them.
It's because they were singing about how corrupt the government and the church was in that, and also there's like some feminist messaging. But yeah, 2 years in prison.
Yeah, that's crazy.
For that, and I want to talk a bit about what I learned there and what kind of treatment they went through, at least one specific woman, Nadia Tolokonokova. She worked 16 to 17 hours a day in the prison sewing, like, assembly line.
Jeez.
Because the prison administration, like, basically, they were, all the women there were treated as free slave labor. Like, it was, they were paid 29 rubles, which is 45 Canadian cents per month.
Per month?
For working 16 to 17 hours, hours per day, they would get one day off per month. And it was just...
45 cents a month?
Mm-hmm.
How much is that a day?
That's like 0.0 like 1 cent.
Like no chocolate bar with that
cent
money.
A day, basically. And yeah, like the conditions were brutal. A lot of the seamstresses who couldn't keep up were like forced to sew naked. They were beaten, given punishments. Like they were locked out of the whole, like the barracks, I think.
Jeez.
Even in the winter time, like people got frostbite. I mean, I kind of knew about some prison conditions that were pretty harsh, but it was just pretty shocking to see from a first person perspective, because she was like writing on the walls of this exhibit, like her point of view and stuff on it. And she actually went on a 9-day hunger strike to protest the conditions. And
jeez. And this involved hooliganism. And so that's why she went to prison.
Hooliganism.
Hooliganism. Hooliganism. Wow, this is a hard word to say. But that's why she was working 16, 17 hours per day, just because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Which is insane, I think.
And in her trial, I think it was stated also, like, they were put in jail for hurting the feelings of the Orthodox in Russia, which is a crazy thing to be put into jail for. So no freedom of speech there.
Yeah, because there's no way, if they did this performance in Canada or maybe the U.S., they would not be penalized to this extent to 2 years imprisonment.
Wow. So, yeah, and just, like, their main thing was making music, making songs, performing them in places. They would dance. They'd just take up public space, and just people would whip them, beat them up. Like, a lot of people were against them. They also had supporters, but...
Right.
It was, yeah, very brutal exhibit to see, but very, very interesting to see how it kind of progressed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had that pepper spray incident as well that they were performing, kind of, or tried to perform at the Sochi Winter Olympics in 2014, which is, mm-hmm. I guess, now 2 years after, so maybe their imprisonment was ended, and then they went back to performing, and, yeah, they got pepper sprayed, and they were getting beat to the ground, and their guitar trying to be smashed, and I watched the video, mm-hmm. and you can search it online, too, but there's also, like, a little boy who was part of the guards who was also trying to beat them up. I was like, what is in the backwards...
And it is, yeah, they went through a lot of just brutality. It was relentless, but they were also relentless, which is pretty inspiring. Like, every time something, like, somebody would be combating their message, they would just come back stronger every time. And
without violence, right?
Yeah, without violence. Like, always peaceful. Always peaceful. And a big message in the exhibit was, if you don't fight every day, you will never be free. So very, like, very much emphasized how important, like, revolting is, and just the commitment to revolting against injustice or speaking up, like, against injustice, because it's not just one time that's gonna get you, like, anything really accomplished. Like, you need to always be doing it. And they still are. Like, they're still protesting with, like, Russia's invasion of the Ukraine and stuff like that.
Yeah, good for them. Mm-hmm. Like, someone's doing it. Yeah,
someone's gotta do it, for sure.
Exactly. We have to inspire, but...
Mm-hmm. The thing that I left, though, after leaving this exhibit, I was just thinking to myself, Putin is still president. They're also fighting for LGBTQ+ rights, and there's still not much of that happening there. So not a lot has changed. I was feeling a little discouraged. I was like, it's very inspiring what these women did, but I was thinking to myself, like, how powerful even are citizens in a kind of regime, like dictatorship like that, or even just in general in governments in the world.
I think their goal was especially hard, though, just because Russia is so traditional, and especially the majority of the people there are still very against homosexuality. Mm-hmm. So it's really hard to advocate for those things when not even your own people want. Most people are shunning you away and saying, "Hey, no, we don't like supporting these ideas that you're putting out here." So
yeah, and especially with the government, there's also so much propaganda, so it's really hard to fight against that.
It's more of a societal...
Yeah, it's like a cultural, like, thing that they're fighting
exactly.
against.
Exactly. You need way more people than that. Mm-hmm. Or how many people do you need to fight against need, a like, whole cultural whole, need, revolution.
Yeah, it needs to be like a
second revolution. Cultural revolution yeah. here. Make history.
But yeah, maybe. I mean, this is probably the beginning of it, you know? Like, we gotta start somewhere.
Mm-hmm. But at least they peacefully protested, did a peaceful protest, because there is statistics that many more peaceful protests are more successful than violent protests. Mm-hmm. So I think it's the percentage-wise, 54% of major nonviolent campaigns were successful versus 26% of violent campaigns. So I feel like, yeah, if I was watching mm-hmm. these videos online and saw Pussy Riot, like, starting to beat up the guards themselves as well and saying, hey, like, we're against or we're for homosexuality and stuff like that and feminist rights, but then they started beating up the guards yeah. and stuff, I don't think I'd it want to side with them.
It doesn't really garner people's support, especially yeah. when they're already against something, to see it being stood up for with violence. Mm-hmm. I also would like to add on to that stat, because I also have a little fact.
Research!
Yeah, research. There's this paper published in 2020, and it found that there's, like, three different types of protest, like, violent, normative, but then there's also, or like, violent, nonviolent, normative, non-normative, so I guess four. And they found that nonviolent and non-normative action was the most effective. And what that means is that nonviolent, I think you guys know what that means, but it basically just, like, maintains public support, like we were talking about before, like what DJ Coco was yeah. saying. And then non-normative, like examples of that are like striking, sitting in, just occupying public space, boycotting. And that's a lot of what Pussy Riot was actually doing. Versus normative is just marching or rioting or something like that. And yeah, they found that it was more like non-normative, non-violent things were seen like as disruptive, but still with clear goals and immediate calls to action and like kind of more of a clear plan than just marching. Like there's not a lot
right,
of
yeah.
Like
what's the
instant action needed to stop. Like with striking, it's like, oh, we really have to do something. There's pressure, but just marching mm-hmm. isn't doing as much.
Exactly. So I think when they were in the church, when they were disrupting services and stuff, mm-hmm. people were like, hey, stop. So that's probably why it's so successful.
Yeah, exactly.
In that sense. Interesting.
Yeah. And I also just wanted to talk about one quote that I saw in the exhibit. And I thought I didn't really know what to think of it at first, but it says, the worst sin on earth is cowardice. And then it also said, betrayal is a private form of cowardice. And it said, like, in this context of Russia, which is like a super deeply religious country that opposes a bunch of things and calls them sin. So this quote kind of flips what morality is and what should actually be considered sinful. So what do you think, DJ Coco? Do you agree with this?
Yeah, we were talking a little bit about this before. Mm-hmm. I personally, I do believe cowardice is a sin, but not the biggest sin out there. Yeah. And as well, it's not entirely a sin, because I think cowardice can also help you as well, because I think of it more from an point, like back when we were the homos, yeah. old homo sapiens, yeah. we were running out in the wild, and what kept us safe was being cowards, because if we would flee from danger, we'd be safe from the predator, and we could carry on our genes to our offspring.
Generation.
So, and as well, I think just in today's age too, cowardice is also helpful in a sense that not that it's great, but from bullying, like cowardice is not dressing the way you want or being individual, and so you just dress like everyone else because you're too scared to be an individual,
yeah.
so you don't get targeted for bullying or like in arguments.
But also with bullying, if you're not standing up for someone who's getting bullied and you see that happening, you're being a coward.
True.
And I think that is kind of wrong. Like,
I think that's
harming
two sides.
Other people. Yeah, it's
yeah, two sides.
Sides
of the cowardice dime. But
yeah.
But yeah, I don't say it's a complete sin, but I think we had a segment where we believe that bravery
yeah, is like, something it's that's kind of the other side of things. Like, yeah, cowardice, it definitely allows for a lot of oppression to be upheld and even kind of supports some structures mm-hmm. that uphold oppression. But I think it's really hard to stand, like what Pussy Riot did, for example. Like, I don't think we can be holding everyone
to that same
standard. But maybe we should, though. Like, maybe we should. I don't know. But I do think bravery is, like, on the other side, if cowardice is, like, the biggest sin, bravery is kind of one of the biggest virtues, I think, in the world that someone could have.
Right. It could also edge off into recklessness, though, and dangerous behavior if it's taken too far, too, though.
Yeah, but if it's kind of like if it's for the greater good.
True.
I don't know if that's, like, a bad thing, mm-hmm. necessarily. But it is, it's definitely hard to say that cowardice is, like, the greatest sin on
Earth. Yeah, not the worst.
But it definitely feeds into a lot of terrible behavior, mm-hmm. I think. Or at least it's part of it. Because it is, like, inherently selfish.
To not stand up.
Yeah, to not stand up. Or, like, if it does feel wrong.
But it is rooted in us, though.
It is.
To not stand up. So.
But there's a lot of things that are rooted in us or that we have, like, inclinations to do that are still wrong, I feel.
True.
But then that's also, like, I don't know how to determine that necessarily, but...
Getting into much. So what is your final comment then, do you think, then, on the worst sin?
It's kind of depends on the person, too, because it's, like, some people could overcome cowardice easier from, like, a place of privilege, I feel, and just like they're scared, but the consequences are going to be less for them if they stand up versus like other people. I don't know what my final thing is, but I think bravery is just a very important thing.
So flip the script and say that the worst sin on Earth is cowardice.
Because everyone's a coward at everyone's some point, for sure. Like, you know, you're scared, but
everyone's scared,
but. It isn't, like, that's how change happens, though, is people
standing up
and being brave, protesting.
Exactly.
Like, that's
how history is made.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, we need people to be brave, and we shouldn't just say that nobody really should have the responsibility either to, like, you know, we can't be like, everyone can be brave.
Oh, that's why there's not too many world figures that we study in history, like, compared to the vast population of 8 billion people. We only study, like, maybe 100.
There's just a few.
So it's very difficult to have bravery, but that's why it's such a virtue, then.
Yeah.
So, but
it's a hard one. I hope you guys think about that quote. And
yeah, we need to think
get back
about
to
that
us. But yeah, it's an interesting one to think about. Like, what standards should we hold people to?
Yeah.
Anyways. The exhibit goes until June 2nd. So you guys should check it out.
Go to it.
Mm-hmm.
In Vancouver. I think that's the end of us for today as well. I think we talked for a long time again.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much for bearing with us this episode with technical difficulties and also just talking for so long. But we really appreciate you guys being here. We're basically at the end of our show now.
Yes. So we'll see you next Tuesday for 6 to 7 p.m. And the next show you'll hear will be Revolution Rock at 7 p.m. and then Vancouver at 8 p.m. with our music coordinator, Connor. So stick around for that. And just give our final thank yous and we'll play our last song as we leave. So you'll be hearing Paige Joy.
No. Thick by Shy Girl.
Oh no, I put the wrong one. Thick by Shy Girl.
I'm a
see you guys next week, Tuesdays at 6 p.m.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz, and this is Climate Connections. During a wildfire, many animals survive by fleeing the area. Afterward, restoring the landscape can help set the stage for wildlife to move back in.
We can plant the trees, we can put the nest boxes in, but it's like building the concert hall, but you haven't got your musicians there. So how do we get the species to return?
Elizabeth Snyderzik of Charles Sturt University in Australia says one strategy is to attract animals with sound. By playing recordings of the songs, calls, and chirps they'd expect to hear in the forest.
They might go, there is something good over there, there's some healthy habitat, or that's prey.
The approach has already worked in other ecosystems. For example, at a restored coral reef, researchers played recordings of a healthy seascape.
And oyster larvae went to that site where they were playing the healthy seascape, as opposed to the control site where not much happened at all.
As Snyderzik says, luring species that visit a forest even briefly can help jumpstart ecosystem recovery. For example, bird droppings disperse plant seeds and fertilize soil. So after a disaster, playing the sounds of a healthy forest can help create one. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Radio Rewind. Now we wait it. Radio Rewind. Now we wait it. Radio Rewind. Radio Rewind. The following content has previously aired on CJSF. But don't worry, we'll be back next week with fresh content. CJSF 90.1 FM. Diverse. Independent. Yours.